It essentially was a technology that was designed to tap into the fabric of space-time itself. So in other words, if you can alter, if you can engineer the fabric of space-time locally, then you do have a technology that will give you access to these three things, a free energy and a field propulsion device, but as a weapon. Of course, anytime you weaponize this stuff potentially, you have a weapon that would make a hydrogen bomb look like a firecracker. So they were doing truly, truly exotic avant-garde research.
And that was a little bit about who was really behind the flying saucers, and it introduces our show on alternative physics, electricity, magnetism. We have a guest with us. Would you like to use an assumed name to protect you from the CIA and military intelligence?
My name's Jim.
Okay.
And I work with my friend Burl, who is into alternative energy and physics, so he's not able to be here today, but he sends his regards.
And you make devices for him, right?
That's right. One of the things I'm working on now is a means of saving energy from automobiles. If you have to drive a car, which I do, and many of my friends do, we figured out a way to store the energy that the alternator puts out over long trips. Basically, it's just using extra batteries to store that energy, and then using a inverter to release that energy when you're not using the car. So,
and you also make like magnetic pulse devices for
healing,
right?
Yeah, he makes magnetic field pulsing systems that, he's designed them. I build them. That are able to help people get through various illnesses and aches and pains. They found to be very helpful with folks that have problems with bone disorders, broken bones, healing using the device.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even the medical community, the mainstream medical community, has been able to verify that those things, they work effectively for that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. But you're not recommending that here and now, because that is a misdemeanor, practicing medicine without a license.
This is just research for informational purposes only. The way I look at it is they're research machines, you know. It's
right.
For everybody to try, and if it doesn't work out, we'll even buy it back, you know. Mm-hmm. We don't care.
Because they've used electronic healing before in the past, and it usually gets repressed, like Roy Rife.
Yeah, Royal Rife, I think there is Roringmeyer comes to mind, was jailed for suffered a lot of persecution.
Mm-hmm.
For recommending and building devices similar to what we're building now.
Mm-hmm. Wilhelm Reich and stuff, he was also harassed for Orgone Energy and things like that. It's because it threatens the profits of the drug companies.
Yeah, it does. It's competition.
Mm-hmm.
And
but we are electromagnetic. I mean, the nerves are
everything in your body is oriented toward creating a magnetic or an electromagnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a summation of microcurrents and larger currents that radiate. Burl has invented he's discovered what he calls the spin force.
Mm-hmm.
And the apparatus that he has for detecting that is real simple. You can make one at home. It's made out of Tinker Toys. It's you suspend it from the ceiling, and if you sit under it, you'll notice that it'll create this. Your spin force will create
vortex
influence, the vortex that will cause this apparatus to start spinning slowly.
Mm-hmm.
So the degree of the strength of your field will dictate how much rotation you get, because
mm-hmm.
eventually the little string that holds it up will wind, and it will create a tension in there, so that it will only go so far.
And kind of rotate back.
Right.
And the brain itself is highly electromagnetic,
exactly.
And the consciousness could even just be a wave phenomenon.
Yeah,
some kind.
We were discussing that before, weren't we? The effects of consciousness.
He has a theory that, you know, like the solar flares and stuff can be influenced by human conscience.
Yeah, one of the things, every once in a while he has a gathering where we try to meditate on influencing, not necessarily the solar flares, but peace and harmony. Mm-hmm. He likes to. That's one of his goals in life. He had formerly was a he had a organization called the Academy of Peace Research, and one of the things they would do is meditate on creating a world peace, especially when tense situations would come up in the news. People would concentrate mm-hmm. on that to try to create from all the negative. Try to transform that into a positive energy.
Positive. Yeah, I read they did a study in Washington, D.C. at some point. A few thousand people meditated, and while they were meditating, crime dropped dramatically in the city. So there is we do live in an electromagnetic environment,
right.
And we can influence each other that way.
And I think it's very, well, it's actually a shame that of the physics community doesn't seem to, until recently, take consciousness into account when trying to account for how the universe works. It's all mm-hmm. a cause and effect. And
strictly materialistic.
Materialistic, yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. They do have the observer effect. But they were talking about this at the PennyU last night. They got into the zero-point energy and the vacuum... quantum vacuum that we're surrounded by is, you know, could be a source like the Akashic record of all kinds of information, as well as energy. It's a large source of energy. We were talking about the introduction had about the zero point, and was involved in the Philadelphia experiment, and which you actually did an experiment of your own on.
It's one of my friends, and you know, he would be fairly reluctant to come on the radio, but. If you go to our website, if you want to look it up, Turbo Magnetics Research Associates, you can look for his name, Larry Adams, and his thesis was the basis for one of our experiments. And we actually did the experiment back in 1987, where we caused a flying levitation around in a cone-shaped magnetic field coil, saddle mm-hmm. coils.
And it was a spiral, right?
It was a spiral. It caused a spiraling effect. And it was basically a rotating magnetic field amplified to where you had 90-degree vectors of the field. Hmm. And that caused the levitation. And theoretically, I mean, all it his idea was to create teleportation. Yeah, we made the little particles fly. But you might say that's magnetic levitation.
Because they were iron or steel, or it wasn't.
But the ship was iron, so, you know, so what are we saying here?
Well, in the ship, they were trying to make it invisible. They used certain frequencies, I believe, too. I think the frequencies of light or something.
Yeah, you know, it's been hard for me to really to get at the history of that. There's so much...
Well, it's classified.
Well, yeah, and now there's... you'll see a lot of... I don't know if you want to call it propaganda, but on the television medium,
mm-hmm.
They supposedly came up with an entire crew of the Eldridge that never heard of it, and they sailed and never had any encounters like that.
There's always a possibility it could be a fraud or, you know, sell some books. You never know. But then again, there's always disinformation as well,
you know.
And I noticed they also mix in some truth when they're doing that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that when you do see the truth later on, you think, oh, that's just part of the fraud.
Right.
I think there is something to this. Because mm-hmm. I studied this a lot. And I would look for, like Roy Wright, people that were being harassed or people that were being killed, you know.
Yeah.
So I think they stopped killing people on this because it became too obvious what the real story was just by following the bodies.
Interesting.
You've also you got into that. You said you were interested in electromagnetic effects, or kind of like liquid too. You can make all the forms of liquid with electricity as well, right?
Well, that's the analogy with the idea. Of course, you're familiar with the ripple in a pond analogy to radio waves,
mm-hmm.
and so we figured there was further analogs, including bubbles and whirlpools. So
Philadelphia was the whirlpool.
I would guess, yeah.
Yeah, and you also did some bubble stuff.
Yeah, and that was with the Tesla coil, with the small ball lightnings.
You made little ball lightnings. Yeah. Tell us a little about how you did that.
Well, basically use a dual secondary Tesla coil. It's on our website. And mm-hmm. We used, farmed the equipment out to a student in Los Angeles, and basically kept in touch with him and financed him. And he was able to show us and send us pictures of his results, which we later compared with another experimenter in Belgrade. His name is Neli Kosanovic, who is one of the curators of the Tesla Museum in Belgrade. And we did concurrent experiments, and Neli got the best results. He had actually a single coil, Tesla coil, using wood chips. Adjusting the frequency of the coil to where that he could create a center. In other words, you'd have a streamer, and along in this streamer of lightning created by the Tesla coil, there was a bright spot. So in other words, you could tune it a certain way to increase or decrease the intensity of the bright spot in the streamer.
You say wood chips, what do you mean? I mean, was this pulled like sawdust or something?
Wet wood chips is one of the things you want to
explore. Yeah, I got a book here on a homemade lightning, and it talks about usually there's a lot of wetness, because they appear in storms, too. That's usually where you see ball lightning in nature, during a, you know, especially violent storms, there's a lot of electricity, and tornado vortexes forming, because it is, it's I think it's two counter-rotating plasma, like a donut.
Well, the interesting thing is it seems like the really offbeat experimenters get the best results and the straight arrow and engineers. One friend of mine is a NASA engineer in Ohio, and he had a vast array of huge electrolytic capacitors around concentric rings with a tube in the middle, all tuned and everything, and with basically a metal fuse. And I tried to convince him to use carbon or something else, you know, something more. It was a copper fuse, basically, and he fired at this huge electric arc and got a loud bang, but no ball lightning. it's really helpful, though, to have a skeptic on your team, somebody that's with you that doubts everything, right?
Yeah.
And then we'll go ahead and do an experiment and say, see?
Do you have blueprints for this? Were there any?
Were
there any simulations or prototypes?
No, this was an actual machine. He called it the Boltron, and I think he still got it assembled in his garage. He probably, there is something about it on the net. His name is Frank Stinger, and he has a little website with a video of his experiment.
He couldn't get ball lightning?
Not with what he was doing.
Did he use the particles? I mean, because that's critical.
That's what I'm telling you. What's fascinating about some of the engineers is that they're stuck on their own idea, and they don't want to take input from...
Well, the book was saying a lot of your straight arrow scientists are used to clinical, clean, nothing to interfere with the experiment. And it needs to be kind of dirty, it was saying. You got to have some kind of particles, chalk, or something that absorbs water and is can carry a charge. And you said you were using carbon in yours, right?
Because
it changed the conductivity as it got hotter.
That's right. The carbon is an interesting element because usually for... almost everything else, for any kind of metal, like copper, you heat it up and the resistance goes up and then you get less conduction and therefore less current. With carbon, it's just about, it's reversed. The hotter it gets, the more conductive it is. So it's an interesting thing to...
Like with an arc lamp, maybe.
Right.
Well, ball lightning gets quite hot. There's quite a bit of energy in those. I've heard they're kind of dangerous.
Well, I'd imagine you wouldn't want to get near one. Another thing I've seen on that, if you go on the YouTube, type in ball lightning, there's fellows doing interesting experiments with the just arc welders.
I'd like to explain a little more what it is.
You'd like an explanation of what ball lightning is? It's you usually see it in nature during thunderstorms, and it's a means that. The lightning streamer, which comes as, it's a long stream of plasma, separates if, in other words, breaks. There's a break in the plasma, and a fireball comes out of it. All right, so, sometimes it lasts for 20 seconds to a minute. Some of the odd characteristics that it has is that it will travel along electric lines. It'll seem mm-hmm. to have a mind of its own.
Yeah, it acts really weird. Yeah, people say that it looks like it's alive like or something.
It's,
yeah.
Right. It's almost like it has its little mind and it's going to follow its own little path and do what it wants to do.
It kind of hovers.
Hovers.
It
yeah.
can. I've heard that it can pass through the walls of airplanes and stuff too. The one will pop into.
That was one of the interesting things, and the reason my friend in Ohio, the NASA engineer, decided to do this is that he created a document. It was about a 42-page document full of mathematical equations, which I didn't understand. That excuse us. All the theory of how this ball lightning was created and included was the a short description of a ball lightning that came through the window of an airplane. Mm-hmm. It had passenger. It was a passenger plane. It came through the front window where the pilots were, right between them, ran along the aisle where the passengers were, and then exploded with a bang. And fortunately, it wasn't enough of a bang to do damage to the aircraft. But later on, when they examined the window, there's a tiny hole in it, and this ball lightning was the size of a basketball. So how did it get through this tiny hole?
Weird.
Yeah. Was the author of this 40-page report a Nazi hiding in Argentina?
That's funny.
Yeah, the ball lightning is very similar to how UFOs look. You know, they always glow at night and stuff, and it may actually be the technology involved. It does levitate.
Yeah.
And where does it getting all that energy, too? You know, in that small of a space, how is it maintaining?
Some people we speculated that it has actually a fusion reaction. Mm-hmm. Because, in fact, that's what his idea was, my friend. That, I don't know why he didn't follow through and put the right elements together, but he had family issues, other things to do, you know. But with that powerful an apparatus, you could just about get just about anything.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of them landing in a barrel of water and immediately
starting it to boil. Yeah,
so there's quite a bit of energy. You don't want to touch one of those things if you ever see them.
Yeah.
It could be explained that spontaneous combustion where somebody just burns up. They're also seen a lot at around crop circles as well.
I've seen videos of that, and they seem don't seem bright enough to be the ball lightning that comes from lightning. That's another phenomenon I think that's more related to something called orbs.
I've never heard of orbs. What are orbs?
Orbs are what are attributed to helping create the crop circles you just mentioned.
Okay.
In other words, there's a few videos of people that kind of camp out at night waiting for something to happen, and sure enough, they see these little, and they're not bright, they're fairly dim when you look at the video, and they do circles and eventually create the circle around each other, in other words, rotate, and created a crop circle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this could be trick photography. You know, you never know.
There's always fraud going on.
There's always fraud going on.
I think more than 90% of crop circles are fraudulent. But they've been in that area for hundreds of years. There's been reports of them going way back. And there's a lot of, I saw one show that there was like chalk underneath the ground there.
Uh-huh.
And during drought years or something, the water comes out, and that's when there's more crop circles and stuff. And the true ones do have like meteoric particles, so it may be some kind of a current coming down from the ionosphere.
Yeah, but I think some of them are just way too complex to be
explained. Those are the fraudulent ones.
You think so? Yeah. No, I thought those were the good ones.
Well, usually the ones I heard that were good are usually just circles, you know.
Yeah.
And they have the meteor dust and the bending.
That'd be too simple to make. Anybody can make one as a simple circle with a board and a string tied to a post in the middle of the field. With these complex ones, that takes some real doing to do it. But the fact is that it would take a team of people, and they don't see any trail from the road or wherever they have to come from to get at this thing. There's no people, the trail going back and forth.
Sometimes there's the tractor rows or something.
Well, I guess they'd have to follow the tractor rows or something. I don't know.
I've heard there's some teams that do that.
Yeah.
Say, orbs are formed by the same token as ball lightning. Did I hear that?
I couldn't say. They seem like it looks like a different. I don't know if we'd call it an aspect of the same thing, but are a different way of doing it. The videos of ball lightning are very dramatic, where the orbs are subtle. So there might be some just qualitative difference.
And the orbs last longer. Ball lightning is just a minute or something.
Right.
So, I mean, how long were you doing that? How big did your ball lightning did you make?
Mine was probably a quarter inch, okay, in size. And
how long did it last?
Kosanovic, a few seconds, and, you know, 2 to 3 seconds. All right. So we probably, there's probably folks out there that superseded. These experiments were back in 2003 mm-hmm. or 4 when I first got the, you know, assembled to test the coil. So there's probably things that have gotten better results since then. Since my a lot of my energy right now is consumed with assembling the pulse magnetism machines, I don't have a chance to do it much anymore.
Mm-hmm. So, I was going to ask you, what pulses do you, I mean, there are certain frequencies you use or certain, you could talk about that a bit. That's kind of how they work, right?
Yeah. They're in the range of 20 kilohertz to 50 kilohertz.
One of them is like, I think the Schumann one.
Well, you can just look at it that the larger the coil, the lower the frequency. And Tesla had huge coils, and he was down in the range of audio range of frequencies. Hmm. So it doesn't seem to be frequency dependent. It's a matter of getting the right combination of two different frequencies, at least two different frequencies.
Create a harmony or something? Or?
Yeah, some kind of harmonic that was able to, he was using. So that's why we use dual, it was a two dual secondary coils. In other words, a single primary and mm-hmm. a dual secondary.
Because resonance is also a vortexes and resonance are the common thing in zero-point energy.
Yeah.
But isn't there one like the Earth's frequency or something, the time it takes a light beam to go around the Earth across
that's
the Earth?
That's the Schumann resonance.
The Schumann resonance.
Okay, that's, yeah, the time
that's
it takes.
Part of what you use,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's 7.8 cycles per second. It's really very low cycles.
That's because all of nature kind of tunes into that.
Yeah, that's results from the atmosphere. The ionosphere creates a shell around the Earth, and if you set off any kind of electric frequency, or electric impulse, rather,
mm-hmm.
That impulse will travel around the globe in 7.8 seconds. Or it's 7.8 hertz.
And so that's
7.8 yeah. cycles per second.
That's for healing, or the different frequencies have different results, right?
Yeah, you use multiples of that. We use 7.8 and 15.75 hertz for the healing frequencies that Pearl likes to use. So we tune our machines to those, to the Schumann resonances.
And do you get different results from different frequencies? Like some will make you sleepy or some wake you up? Or
oh, well, I think there's the polarity. Burl probably could discuss that more fully, but the idea of polarity, I believe, is that the north is relaxing and the south is stimulating. So depending on the kind of injury you have, you would use either the north or the south pole. If you have a chronic ache and pain, you probably want to use the stimulation. If you have something that's of course, I'm not really sure. I might have that reversed. I better not expound on that. I might have that wrong.
You're going to concentrate on the nuts and bolts suit here.
Right. I concentrate on the nuts and bolts of it. I'm not really that familiar with the physical, you know, how it should be applied, uh-huh. I'd say, for patients. I've used it, but in fact, I have used it for pain. I get pains in my neck now and then. And because I have calcium deposits, mm-hmm. and I'll use it once in a while to put it under a pillow under my neck. And he said to use the North Pole for that, and that seems to be helpful.
Mm.
And he'd we have the coils that we build have red for the one side, blue on the other, so I know which pole I'm using.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's, and then he'll consult with his clients as to what. How to use the machines, you know, if they have any questions. So he's always available to at least email them, you know, mm-hmm. and consult with them about their...
He also, on his spiral theory, he was saying something about he had a spiral antenna. He would train at the planets or something and get and put it into water and then drink the water and get different effects from the water.
Yeah, he does a lot of self-experimentation mm-hmm. on his own person to get to his own impression of what he's doing.
I forgot what he did. He say Venus got you drunk or something? I forgot what he said.
I wouldn't know.
One of them made you mad, I think, and depending on the planet. How does he track it, though? I mean, how does he... Because they move, right?
The planets? They certainly do move. Gosh, I wish I could tell you. I'm not sure how he... he has the program. He has a program about how the...
Oh, so he's like a telescope thing?
No, it's all on a computer.
Oh, okay.
And the computer will tell him the alignments of the planets and how to get the right energy balance, you know, through... The coil you were just describing is a conical coil that's supposed to create a vortex
mm-hmm.
and help harmonize your thoughts.
Mm.
And he has also experimental brain harmonizer. It has eight outputs of eight people at a time could harmonize their thoughts by tuning into the same frequency. So. He's experimented with that a lot. So.
Interesting. Yeah. Telepathy and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Hmm. What other electronic devices have you built? You have like a Wimhurst generator? Or?
We have a little experimental Wimhurst generator. It's just a demonstration. It's a crank model. You use a hand crank to spin it around.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll create... a little arcs. It'll make quite a jolt, about 75,000 volts.
Ouch.
Yeah. So, yeah, and it's quite a bit of current, so you got to be careful with it. And then there's the vortex tube, which is a plasma. It's a plasma chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we were one of the first ones to actually photograph. Other people have used a plasma tube, but we were able to photograph and make a short movie of the electromagnetic vortex that's created in a plasma tube. It's something
interesting.
You know,
it seems you got like, that up on YouTube?
Your
website?
We have it on our website.
Okay.
Just look up turbomagnetics, you'll find it.
What's the URL on that website?
USSDiscovery.com. I started that, I gave it that name before I even met Burl. Okay. It kind of morphed, the whole thing morphed into Turbomagnetics Research Associates. Which is a trade union. It's not a company. It's not a. It's the idea of different experimenters getting together over the internet to exchange ideas. And if people come along that are interested in our work, we refer them to that person and how to get in touch with them.
Oh, you say you got a union of.
Yes, it's not the idea of a union is that you don't have to be necessarily you're an advocate. For those folks that are on their own in the experimental and the mm-hmm. job, you know, people that are interested in electronics assembly, like myself, mm-hmm. get together and discuss different projects and different ideas and come up with inventions. It's a way to communicate with people that are interested in the same thing. But we're not, we don't advertise that we are some kind of a corporation or a limited liability or a company.
Mm-hmm.
We're basically a trade union, so we do not have to have, licenses. If people want to impose a license on us, then we confront that at that time. You know, I believe in dealing with people or the world that's oppression or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
We invite them to, email us or, if they have a problem with us, we can have a chat.
Right? You go on strike and turn the power off, right?
Yes. There you go. Yeah,
That's interesting because there is a lot of repression in this area. Yeah. There has been in the past. But they want to keep this because there's weapons involved.
Yeah, and it's a shame. I think things are maybe getting a little more enlightened. I always welcome the let's just say the folks that are might be in law enforcement to listen in or to, you know, visit the website if they have a problem. You
they're
know,
clueless.
I mean,
they can barely handle the homeless. You know,
it's
as we're talking military intelligence,
well,
things
okay,
like that.
That's fine. You know,
interesting
you deal,
files.
Yeah, when they approach you, you deal with that thing. Then you know,
you've never had any threats or anything from
no. Not that I'm aware of. No direct threats.
Or are special invitations for special investigations or strange strange physical forensics? Yeah. Or
you were in contact, though, with Hutchinson, and he's been hassled.
It was actually with his, and I forgot to get the guy's name. It was the guy, remember, we were talking, and he wanted to create a Philadelphia Experiment theme park.
Watch your money disappear.
The guy was named Emilione. And, you know, I think we exchanged a few emails, and, you know, I thought this guy was not a good influence on Mr. Hutchinson. So, you know, but I did, we
how far along did that get? Tell me some of the rides.
Well, excuse me.
You didn't have to sign an NDA, did you? There might not be any water here.
Okay.
See, they've implanted something in you, and as soon as you start talking about the...
Yeah. Take a little break.
We'll put on a song.
You like interviewing Jim? How do you say your last
name?
Ostrowski.
That's okay. And see, now that I've let it all hang out with the government, you might as well. Come on over.
All right, everyone.
All right, we're back. We were talking about Hutchinson and the Philadelphia Experiment theme park. Watch the ship disappear.
Yeah. Hutchinson's got some interesting video. Then again, you know, it's like it seems like he can't reproduce his effects when people are present. It's like he gets them on his own and makes pictures of them.
And so I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah, he actually had somebody spend maybe a couple of months with him and fired up his equipment, and it never worked when the guy was present. So, you know, that's one criticism that he has to deal with. I'm not sure. It seems to me, whenever I'm doing experiments, I try to have a video and make a notation of all the settings so that we know how to reproduce that again.
Uh-huh.
You know, not just have a video.
I hear it's very hard to tune these because they're involving resonance.
Well, yeah,
and
he's
stuff.
Got. You should. Yeah, you've probably seen his website where references to his studio. It's at a huge. It's an apartment building, I believe, in Canada,
uh-huh.
And the whole thing is filled with naval transmitters and gigantic coils and vacuum chambers, and he gets all these things going at once. I can't imagine his power bill.
Well, he's got 0 point energy because it's zero for his power. He's got these little rocks that he sells, right? That they're like endless batteries. There's always a current coming out of them.
I don't know. I wouldn't know about that. Rocks that have a bat.
I think they're the
electrophorus
phenomenon or something.
Yeah.
Is it that's what 0 point's all about? We're surrounded by almost limitless amounts of energy.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to tap it.
Yeah, that's a challenge. Let's say it's a challenge to trying to find that. You got to work on something that I'm a practically oriented, and I think what I can do right now is you know, people to save the energy that they're using that sitting in traffic, you know. That there's a bunch of energy going into coming out of their alternator into the battery. If you just saved it and then used it for your home later on, you know, you could save a lot on your energy bill. Help save the planet at the same time.
Yeah, conservation should be the first thing we do.
That's something that everybody could do, not just the scientists.
Like the zoning laws for, you know, heat and solar stuff. And again, you had that converts. You know, how efficient is that for converting energy in terms of cost and things like that?
You mean the little converter that I tapped the energy from the alternator in the car? Well, it's better. It's way more efficient. I was the way one of the things I was doing a few a few weeks back, was sitting in the middle of traffic waiting to get into the Bay Bridge Toll Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
I was in traffic for a half an hour, and my engine's going and putting, you know, at least putting some juice into my battery, which I could mm-hmm. use at a later time. Where most of the other folks, that was just going into the polluting the air, you know. Mm-hmm. So if we conserve the energy that's being used, the excess energy put out by our car alternators, that would be one step in the direction. Then what you would need to tap that off is really, it's something called a Y grid connector. It's an inverter, either a Y grid converter, a tied converter that you can use to pump back into your house. That if you're not running anything, it would reverse the current through back in and feed the power grid. One of the things you want to look out for that right now, though, is the power companies are somehow getting wise to that, and they're putting in what they call greedy meters.
Yeah.
And that's evil.
Yeah.
I mean, in other words, you put a meter in that won't reverse, and it'll just read when if flow goes backwards, it'll just stop.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they don't want to give. They don't want to pay you for creating energy.
Right? Yeah. So that's a grievance. I think that's a valid grievance that you know, somebody should abolish those things. You know, of course, then there's a safety issue involved. If you have power and that somehow there's an outage in some part of your neighborhood, you have to have a way for that your Y grid inverter connector to detect that the power is out in the neighborhood so that the linemen that go out and fix it won't be electrocuted. So,
Trouble with especially the zero point. It can get out of hand really quickly up. You know, that's what Hutchinson was saying. A lot of his little battery things would blow up if you draw too much power.
Yeah.
Have you done any radio stuff?
Well, when I was a youngster.
I don't mean on the air. I'm talking about playing around with.
Not recently. I was just going to mention that when I was a kid, I had a little neighborhood radio station. It was called KLOD. Clod Radio. It was a high school thing, you know. So, yeah, when I was first starting and, putting together little electronic kits, I amplified it was like a two transistor thing, and it probably got out to my immediate neighborhood within 150 yards or so. I don't know.
So you had to stop because the FCC shut you down.
No, I lost interest.
It's a good thing because they're looking for people like you. You know?
Yeah.
It's happened here. Yeah. You know, the reason I asked is because we at one of our meetings we had trouble with our transmitter, so we were on a low power. So someone doubled the size of our antenna to get twice the power out of it or something, or twice the range.
I don't know
if
that's the correct procedure. You increase the size of the antenna, then
I think it's a harmonic.
Half wave of reflector or a full wave.
Yeah, I think it was like a half, and then it became a full wave.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
So that gives us more power, right? I didn't really understand it when...
Yeah, your antenna has to be tuned. It has to be a certain length, and when you increase it, then it becomes a full wave. Then you have to kind of change the electronics because there's a reflection. Whenever you use a transmission line,
mm-hmm.
It has to be cut to the right length so that you don't get reflections. That's old shortwave. Not shortwave, but the CV radio crowd was in touch with that. They would broadcast on like 27 megahertz or so, and it was all about tuning their antenna. They'd shave a little bit off the top of it to get it tuned exactly right. So it's critical, and then if you increase it by a half wavelength, then you have to rework the tuning again. You know, so. So yeah, it's a.
It had a little thing on the bottom or something in the secondary transformer.
Probably a load coil or something. I don't know.
I don't know what it was. It was the main one had it, and then the extension had to have it too. Or something.
Yeah.
I didn't really understand it, but supposedly we got more power pushing that Christian radio from down south.
Christian radio.
We're on the same. We're not.
Uh-huh.
Licensed, so
okay.
we're on the same wavelength as somebody else that has, like, I think they have a 10-watt thing down there.
Uh-huh.
Oh, they came into us. So, like, you could drive down 41st, you know, and you can hear the Christian radio really good because we're on low power now, but you get to the cross streets and you can hear us come in, so it's kind of
really?
Funny. Yeah.
Okay.
So I was going to start doing some Christian rock here to get those guys mixed up and what station they're listening to.
Yeah. So then let me ask you something. Do you get? I've heard of this place, and you know, like it's been.
Don't say where it is.
Okay, no, I'm not going to say where it is. But do you get hassled by the some kind of authorities?
Yeah, the FCC just recently made them move the transmitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can, as you know, they can triangulate on it very easily if they want to.
Yeah. So what's the impediment? I mean, it looks like it's a very nice outfit you've got here. Why wouldn't you want to just get? Isn't there a simple license that you can get?
It might cost money or something.
It might cost money.
Give money to Uncle
Sam.
What
if you got a donation, like somebody, some benefactor to crunch you the money to get a license?
But then,
how about a tax loophole? It gives it to us for free.
We couldn't say, you know, we couldn't do the politics we do, probably. Yeah. I couldn't say fuck, you know, and things like that.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I see.
We don't want to pay Uncle Sam a dime. They get enough already. Government should be just small enough that you can drown it in
it's
the bathtub.
It's radio for the people, by the people.
Right. Well, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're committing a federal crime sitting there right now, by the way.
We're under 100 watts, though.
So I've heard that, but we heard in the meeting any amount of watts over just a micro amount is like what he was doing as a kid. He's a two-time offender here. Yeah. You know,
right. I'm in trouble now. Right.
But you're a minor, so.
It's over 7 years.
I was a minor
years.
Then, not now.
you can just use a Tesla beam weapon if they try and get you. Uh-huh. Just vaporize them.
Magnetrons.
Magnetrons, yeah. Hey, that was a good, the magnetron from a microwave oven makes an excellent, I think that's, remember Captain Midnight back in the 90s? He was beaming up to one of the satellites and coming in over the satellite TV. Blocking out HBO and just getting on. And I think that's what he was using, a microwave, the magnetron.
Tell us more now. We'd like to do. Yeah. Now, what does this do? You can.
It's a geosynchronous satellites are reflectors of the.
Something you send up, right?
They send them up with rockets. And
You beam off them or something.
Yes, send up your beam. And back in the days when. This was going on. All these folks had parabolic reflectors, some up to 12 and 13 feet in diameter, that were just supposed to be used for receiving the reflections from the
satellites.
And this guy, he hooked up a magnetron from a microwave oven and had that modulated, so he would just
he'd
step on HBO. Okay.
For how large a distance?
Oh, he would only be on long enough for them to, you know, get all excited and fluster. And then
but how many houses did it reach?
Millions.
So he was beaming up to the satellite.
Yeah, he was beaming himself up
using
to the
a parabolic
Midnight.
Reflector
like
and a microwave.
1986. Yeah, look it up. Captain Midnight. 1986 satellite. TV.
Why aren't we doing that? Yeah. I mean, I've only got like
because we don't
want to
get
crop dusted
with plutonium dust.
We're gonna have a meeting next free radio meeting. We're gonna bring a microwave.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So in those days, you could get a satellite TV for like $1,500. You know, the $2,000 just for the dish. But that would actually also make an excellent. Just gut the microwave oven and put it on your car. Mount the satellite dish on your
be mobile like the Scud missiles. Yeah, you know they never did get those Scud missiles.
Yeah.
Well, it's like a maser, right? It's a microwave.
I think
laser.
I hear the FCC at the door right now. We're not recommending you do this at home, kids. This is all for entertainment.
So it's a lot of fun.
That's interesting. So did you do any other Tesla stuff? You make Tesla. That's what you do. You make Tesla clothes.
Well, no,
right?
That's what I used to do. I mean, when I first started the website, I decided, I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but let's try this. And so the first thing was the Tesla coil project, and it kind of grew from there. We reported on Frank Stenger's efforts, former NASA engineer, but now it's I'm more or less a nuts and bolts guy trying to just make a living just like everybody else
and it's down economy
but I'm fascinated with Burroughs theories. One of the things that I would like to, I don't know much about astrology, and he's really deeply into astrology.
I'm deeply into it,
but this is something I've heard from shortwave Christian radio people. Mm-hmm. The constellation of Scorpio, right?
It
has a nice formation of the scorpion's tail, right adjacent to the
Archer.
That's Sagittarius.
Oh, Sagittarius. Yeah.
Okay, but now another way of looking at it, if you go out and look at that constellation, I'm not sure where it is this time of year.
It's the center of the galaxy.
There's the center of the galaxy. That constellation of the Archer, when you look at it, doesn't look like an Archer to me. It's a tea kettle. Okay, and then you have the galaxy, which is like steam coming out of the tea kettle, and then the steam is being poured on the scorpion's tail. It's like a message in the stars that this evil scorpion is going to be chased away by some guy with a tea kettle.
You know, that's the 2012 thing, is that we're moving toward it, but it's still a few hundred years away before it, you know, is completely lined up with the center of the galaxy, and things are supposed to happen, who knows.
Yeah, well, I think things are getting, the political thing, where if we're running low on oil, we have to, the government thinks we have to keep continuing the cycle of wars. You know, we have to keep having wars to get more oil.
That's what they're for.
And that's going to be a lot of negative energy. And I think
you were talking about negative energy. You thought the dark energy was...
Yeah, I think that since I mentioned that... consciousness doesn't seem to be a part of the great physical theory or cosmological consideration. That it just might have something to do, this dark energy, it might have something to do with consciousness, and it might be part of the negativity. That's where all this negativity is stored. And what we need to do is be aware of it. When we have, I think everybody has maybe some level of drama in their life, things that happen to them that in their interaction with their family members or with their friends. Distrust at the root of that is this negativity that once you get a handle on it, once you recognize it for what it is, it's important to see if you can transform that into something light.
Compassion.
Compassion, that sort of thing. Because if things go the way they are, I think we will be in a lot of trouble in 2012 that might be able to hopefully avoid.
We're headed for trouble. I don't think it's coming that soon, though. I do think that electromagnetic beings, ghosts or whatever, or demons or possibly angels too. I think they used to feed them with pain. That's like black magic. You know, that's how they
feed the
demons. I think anytime you hurt yourself.
Yeah.
They come and swoop in and try and feed on it. I had trouble last year with something like that. Someone died and was really mad at me when they died, and they'd been in pain for some time.
Yeah.
So I think they had one of those on them, and I brought my magnet with me to
where
I used to hang out. I think it followed me home.
Icons
the magnet.
Are important. They have a little different.
I did finally figure out how to deal with it, though. They do not like percussive noises.
Is that right?
You know, I was just reading in that book on the Ball of Lightning that he thought there was. It's usually a falling body or a thunderclap. A loud noise precipitates the particles in the air or something. So I think you could, every time now that I hurt myself, I just...
That means we should have fireworks every day.
That in Chinese, they believe that the fireworks drove demons away. Really? There's quite a few, it's...
That was an incredible show, by the way, the last show at Seacliff Beach.
I missed that. I heard the grand finale.
It was awesome. It was incredible. I think what they did was... they set off percussions. It sounded like just a continuous thunder. They did an edison, and I viewed it from a distance. It was, I live in the Live Oak area. I could see it from that area.
Yeah, I was. I'm kind of over
it.
I was going to add, get back to that sound thing. You said something about Tesla's coils were in the sound range.
Yeah, in other words, the electrical frequency was down to 20 kilohertz or so.
So you could hear it or something?
Well, yeah, they would hum and sing, In other words, the different frequencies were in the audio range, so they'd make an audible noise. Not necessarily. And some of them were higher, of course. The smaller you get, the higher the frequency is, okay? But the huge towering things that he built were definitely audible.
Now you see that picture of him where he's just surrounded by lightning bolts and stuff.
Yeah. So, his coils were huge, and everybody knows. Everybody that follows the Tesla story knew how he created so much electrical activity that he burned out a generator in his nearby town,
Colorado Springs. Yeah, he got in a lot of trouble for that.
Yeah, But he was a good man, though. He went there and went to town.
Fixed it or something. Yeah. It's nice to have an electronic repairman of that caliber.
Right.
Pardon? What'd you say?
I'm not sure what the chemtrails people think.
That's another thing is that we had some chemtrails. A friend of hers follows them, has a website on them, and all that aluminum in the air. They were saying that there was a lightning storm a little while back that was like more lightning than ever. I mean, all that aluminum, is that going to cause a lot more lightning if there's a bunch of aluminum in the sky?
It's hard to say. Maybe they figured something out. I know that was associated with the HARP. The big radio transmitting array in Alaska. It's a huge field covered with radio transmitters.
We covered that a little bit. What's your take on HARP?
Geez, it seems to me like they're trying to see the atmosphere the people that are doing this must think it's benefiting something.
So they spend a lot of money, and there's not just that one. Everybody's got them now.
Yeah, could be weaponized.
Something's going on.
Yeah, and I guess these beams could be focused in a way to create a hole in the ozone layer to let in the radiation that could hurt people. In other words, if you create a hole in the a good vacuous hole in the ionosphere, in the magnetic, you get a lot of cosmic rays through that hole. Create an ozone hole in the Arctic.
Mm-hmm. Well, combined with metals in the atmosphere, in your microwave, you're going to heat up the atmosphere then, right? Yeah. And you just dry it up so there's going to be no cloud cover. You
could
do bombing and stuff.
It could be climate change. It could be a lot of different things.
And doesn't the space station go through the South Atlantic Anomaly every orbit where there's a very strange zone dating back to the high-altitude nuclear testing where there's it's a very strange part? We did damage to the Van Allen radiation belt, maybe.
Yeah.
There's strange. Well, also the magnetism of the planet is falling.
Yeah,
I mean, that was I heard in the southern seas and stuff. It doesn't really point to the South Nord Pole. It's all kinds of.
Yeah, and there's a video of on YouTube again of a recent. It wasn't a sighting. It was a airline that was a plane that was following one of these. So it's definitely. They're doing chemical things. There's chemicals coming out of these planes, but it was a close-up. And the comments of the people following the plane were like, they couldn't believe it. But there it was.
Interesting.
It was just, they're spitting out fumes. And it's just, it's great that we have the internet to use as a resource to be caught up with this stuff. But, yeah, they're doing something very odd. And, it's hard to imagine. The only thing I can imagine is that it might be some danger from all the emissions that they're hoping to clean up with this. Hopefully, that might be.
Morrow's view is to stop the greenhouse.
Right.
But to my mind, it's you got to pour a lot of crap into the atmosphere because it gets dispersed and.
Yeah, that'd be a tremendous project.
Expensive.
Well, we have huge holes in our understanding of basic cloud microphysics and aerosols and particulates, even just understanding the radiation balance. It turns out that there are some things in the atmosphere that make global warming much worse than the current data shows. And this has been on a PBS Nova production. So
the methane and stuff.
There are some estimates that the global warming expected at the end of the century could be a lot more than 10 degrees Celsius, which basically means melted polar caps. So there's a lot of physics that is speculative.
They're going to melt. I mean, there's no question about it. Somebody was telling me it's going to create a 200-foot wave, probably multiple. When the glaciers slide off Antarctica, and it happened back in 5500 BC. There was that's the big flood because the Black Sea used to be freshwater until then.
Really? Yeah.
And there's been some other, there's other evidence of it all around the world. So that's what's coming, and that's because we use oil.
Yeah. It seems there's definitely an agenda there that's not in our favor. That I think maybe I know you think it might take longer, but. We better get ready, ready for what's going on.
Well, I think it's just not that far away.
Yeah.
Not that.
Get prepared.
Not 2012, I don't think that, but I do think.
Yeah. That's the Titanic's anniversary, though.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? The Titanic's anniversary was April 15th. Why do they have that the same day as the tax day?
It'll also probably be the day they try to announce the reform of the World Bank.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are private banks, too. They're not government banks. Somebody's making money off them.
Bilderbergers. Yep.
What's your idea of how we could get ready?
Well, the same way that I got ready for the earthquake. I had an instinct about the earthquake in 1989.
Really?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people did. There were several foreshocks. You know, you get a little warning. Nature gives you a warning, okay?
Yeah. Sometimes, yeah.
Ionospheric warnings, for sure. That's been documented.
So, I just felt something coming, and I got ready with all my... And I don't feel an immediate need to do this, but I do have a few things stored that I, if I need to, I can access them. But I think, as time goes on. But this is standard stuff. Have extra water and, battery power. Get solar panels, Get
hurricane preparedness kit.
Yeah, it's just, that sort of thing,
I thought you meant have a kayak waiting.
To go to Australia or Maui or Alaska.
Yeah.
Well, an earthquake, I mean, unless it knocks the shelf off down here. And then we got like a couple of minutes, Dennis was telling me.
Yeah, tsunami.
We're not going to get any warning on that. But the glacier's falling off. They'll tell us. Uh-huh. It'll be hours and hours and hours away. It'll be a long time before the wave gets here. And everybody will be up on the hills. But then what do you do for food and stuff afterwards? Because it's going to stay flooded.
Yeah.
Well, we could have one of Burl's scenarios is that there's a huge marine... underwater seismic laboratory off the coast of Oregon.
Uh-huh.
And there's a fault system down there. And if there is something like the Banda Aceh quake, you could have a huge fault thrust underwater, and that tsunami could take a few hours to go from roughly Portland north towards Vancouver and south towards the California coastline.
Yeah.
And then you depend on bathymetry, and cheap supercomputers can show you what the waves would look like.
Wow.
Well, the one out here just in the trench, this is a deep trench right here. If that goes, it'll just be a couple of minutes. That'll be downtown Santa Cruz will be completely flooded. It'll go up the river, all the rivers that'll go up.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, God help us. I hope that, I think all nature kind of can... surrounds us and tries to give us little internal clues as to what might happen. There's a lot of things that could happen. I think our part of our being is an internal awareness that you can't really rationalize by discussing it. You get a feeling about things, and just be in tune with your solar plexus. That's like the opposite of a brain. It's a brain turned inside out. That's part of our.
It's one of the chakras.
Yeah, it's one of the chakras that Pearl would talk about. And,
spiritual practice?
Yeah, be in good fellowship with your friends. And, of course, there's always going to be drama, with the relationships. It's bound to happen. But try to transform that negative into something positive, if it's thoughts or, a lot of people will internalize negativity and not let it out. But every once in a while, you got to have a good blowout, So
like Mount St. Helens,
right? it's not that's not necessarily negative. You just kind of clear the air, So
do you do any like Kundalini yoga, electric body electricity?
I bicycle. That's as an exercise, but no, I don't do any. I get a treatment now and then from a friend's. Or
acupuncture,
or something? It's like acupuncture. They use Burl's equipment. She's one. Her name is Stella. She's a therapist. And every once in a while, I get a treatment for my neck or for my. I was having a problem back last winter of having difficulty swallowing.
Mm-hmm. And you just had that a couple minutes ago.
Yeah. And so,
did you bring one of those Burl devices with you?
No, I did not.
It's a good thing we have water then.
Yeah, water. Water works just fine. No, it was much worse than that. I couldn't go, talking for more than 2 or 3 minutes. So
you couldn't talk?
I would choke up, So this is one of the things that...
Burl has trouble talking, too. I'm thinking there may be some government things going on here,
He has a different kind of...
I know.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying, he keeps you quiet, right?
Keeps me quiet.
Well, I'm just being facetious.
First Amendment, abuse of the First Amendment.
They don't want you talking about these kind of things. It's a repressed science. Like people used to get killed for this kind of stuff and get their labs blown up and stuff like that.
Okay.
I've heard that using magnets on water is supposed to improve your your internal well-being, or is there more to it?
He's actually supposedly able to improve the flavor of water, make it taste, and cause different effects. In other words, people will act different depending on the type of polarity of magnetism that's used under it. For myself, I couldn't say if that's true. I've tasted the water; it tastes like water to me. But other people will respond to the way he's treated it with different magnets. So, yeah. I think a lot of it is a psychological. He's a psychologist too, so the way he interacts with people in their internal awareness will. Maybe it's like hypnotism, you know,
mesmerism.
Mesmerism, yeah. Mm-hmm. Where a lot of the
remote healing,
remote healing, you know, all those things enter into it. So it's not just the magnets; it's your perception of the reality, your own reality, that he tries to alter.
Yeah, there was a big slideshow, a big demonstration at an airport. I think it was at O'Hare, on the effects of water and how it. Every, you know, the belief in water and what's alive water, what's dead water.
She's talking about the psychic energies or what are the electromagnetic energy. Like mm-hmm. Victor Schoberger did a lot of research on living water and things like that. It needs to have like shade over a creek to have good water. If it's too much sun on it, it gets drained.
For good moonshine.
But
yeah.
It's like the orgone energy or something. You know, the chi of the of the land.
Yeah. Yeah, you folks sound like you know more about that than I do.
Well, like you said, you're a practical guy.
Yeah, right.
Well, but you know more about how to replicate lightning ball experiments.
Okay, right.
I was going to play some lightning basketball, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I think we probably should start wrapping it up here. Brian's going to be in here in 15 minutes. We got to save it, and we'll put on some music. It's been nice having you, Jim.
All right.
What was your website again?
Really good to talk to you.
USSDiscovery.com.
And
say that again.
And then there's Burl.com, but you want an easier one. Burl.com, B-U-R-Y-L.
But USSDiscovery.com is where hobbyists and experimentalists can get a kit to make ball lightning for...
Well, I tell you what, it's not a kit. They can get advice from me.
About the survey.
Or they could... most of the equipment on there is not related to ball lightning. It's the therapy research instruments. Okay, there's a laser tachometer. There's a couple of special motors on there, and then there's our electromagnetic analog of the phallico-soliton. I hadn't had a chance to discuss that.
A soliton? Well, I want to hear now.
The phallico-soliton is an interesting effect. You use a frisbee, and if you have access to any kind of swimming pool, even if it's a public pool, what you do is you take the frisbee, you hold it so that it is perpendicular to the water, and they have the concave side facing the inner side of the pool. You dip it in the pool, give it a push towards the center of the pool, and then lift it out of the water quickly, and you got a phallico-soliton.
A soliton is a wave that doesn't disperse.
It's a wave that self-energizes. And it's a way, it might be a good clue as how this energy, this continuous cycle of energy works. It was discovered by a guy in South America. Oh, well, he was visiting a friend in South America who was, he called Flaco, which I guess means thin in Hispanic. And then he decided to give this thing a shot here, and then he took the frisbee and the swimming pool, and he created dual vortexes. And he discovered that the two vortexes were connected by a wormhole.
What do you mean wormhole? Yeah.
It was the two counter-rotating vortexes in the pool.
Right.
When he used either the frisbee or his hand to go between them, when he broke the wormhole or the small thread that connected the two vortexes, the vortexes suddenly exploded.
Exploded.
Words, well, like, I mean, to like
water, a splash,
like a big splash.
Interesting.
In other words, they stopped. So.
That's probably related to ball lightning because there are two counter-rotating vortexes there too.
It's a counter-rotating vortex. I think that's an interesting area for a lot of the folks that are in the colleges and universities. My understanding is, though, that a lot of the students are discouraged from doing this kind of thing.
Another abomination of our decrepit educational system.
You know, I was going to say the solitron. I think that's how astrology works, is that it sets up a solitron in the solitron in the solar wind. Because each of the planets are actually emit cyclotronic magnetic resonance.
It's a vortex, and the spin of the Earth is related to that. The Earth's core being a huge ball of iron, and we have the electricity streaming in from other parts of the galaxy, creating the rotation.
The stars also are cyclotrons
as
well.
It's all electrical energy.
That's spiraling energy again.
Right, and it's...
But we still don't look at all the fractals for that. There's a lot of fractal math that applies to all this, from the biggest galaxies down to the smaller than DNA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the one thing you might want to check out on the site is the Falico-Soliton experiment, and then our electromagnetic analogy that we made for it. Okay, so
have you done that yet? Did you?
We created a dual magnetic vortex. The idea was simple: you take two of these cone-shaped. They're actually salvaged from color TV sets. If you look in the old color TVs and computer monitors, they have what's called a deflection yoke. And it's saddle coils along with concentric coils. And you have two of them. And then the idea there is to set it up correctly so that your compass, when you put the compass in the center of one, you take it out and it'll start rotating, and you take it out of there and put it in the other one, it'll rotate in the opposite direction. So then you have two counter-rotating voids. And the rule is that you cannot have some kind of starting mechanism. It has to start on its own. So we've broken down the vortex into a systematic phased electromagnetic waves that they has to be fed a certain frequency to create the vortex. Okay, so it has to be phased in a certain way, and you have to have you have to have at least two different generators to create this.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's that tuning thing again.
It's
too.
A tuning thing, yeah.
So. Have you looked into cold fusion at all?
No. That's an interesting and fascinating. Years ago, it was on the Vortex discussion group, and a lot of folks were interested in that, were doing experiments with it. And that was something that I was never set up to do.
Well, we really have to go here. Okay. He's about to come in here any minute, and I have to save this. So it's been great having you here, Jim.
All right. Thank you so much.
It's been very interesting, and we've been listening to Free the Land.
It was a lot
of
fun.
Tune in every Tuesday night from 8 to 10, and I'll give us your feedback and fill out the form online at freakradio.org under archives. Let us know. And let the whole station know what you're listening to and why.